Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode 91 of the Necessary Roughness Podcast, presented by Last Word on Sports. I'm your host, Nicholas Donatic. Hope you all had a fantastic week. Hope you all had a good Thanksgiving. Enjoyed some time with your family, if you did get to spend some time with your family. Stayed safe, I guess, that's a requirement. I have to say that every episode at this point. But, you know, it was a good one. We had two football games on Thursday, and we'll talk about those later in the episode. Not too much bearing, the first one at least. Though we do have some breaking news that we can get to in this episode. We're not going to lead with it, though, because, quite honestly, it's not as significant as some of the other things we're going to get to. However, we're going to be ditching the bigger story, little opening thing that we usually have. And instead, we're just going to go with a traditional, well, from middle last season kind of layout. We're just going to jump right in to the standout seven. Let's talk about, in number one, the Baltimore Ravens. Now, the Ravens are in a bit of a pickle anyway, as they're facing a COVID kind of crisis, as we have the Ravens-Steelers games postponed from, obviously, the end of Thanksgiving all the way till Tuesday, and who knows if it will even get played, and then their following game against the Dallas Cowboys was postponed to Monday Night Football, or I guess it would be late Monday afternoon, possibly. Anyway, but the reason I wanted to talk about the Baltimore Ravens, and I want to talk about them anyway, is this Baltimore team just got punked again by the Tennessee Titans. We saw pregame Tennessee Titans standing on their logo, doing their thing, and that obviously frustrated John Harbaugh, which, I mean, I don't really know why. I guess, sure, you know good, whatever. so he was frustrated, and evidently that didn't carry out through to his team. J.K. Dobbins had a decent game, 15 carries for 70, two catches for 15. You know, Mark Andrews was all right. But as a whole, I would say the Baltimore offense was just mediocre. They dropped 24 in this one, which isn't bad. A buck 86 through the air for Lamar, which is, you know, not good. 50 yards on the ground for Lamar on 13 carries. Say that again, 13 carries. And on the defensive side, you know, Derrick Henry ends this one with a buck 33. Ryan Tannehill, 22-31 for 259. It just wasn't a good one. You know, Corey Davis, 5 for a buck 13. A.J. Brown, a serviceable 4 for 62. And it comes into the situation where now we need to talk about this Baltimore Ravens squad because Lamar Jackson, as we said, I believe in the previous episode, if not the one before, just hasn't taken that next step. And strategically, they haven't really forced him to take that next step either. He's just kind of, you know, toiling along here. And I wonder if there might not be some staff changes in the end of the season here, depending on how this season ends, because we're taking a look right now, and the Baltimore Ravens offensive coordinator obviously is Greg Roman, and you know, Greg Roman has been around for a long time. He was in San Francisco, obviously, with I believe he was in San Francisco with John's brother Jim in the Alex Smith Kaepernick era, but there might be, and look, this is not all on him, obviously, because they did some creative things last year, but this year it just doesn't seem to be there. Perhaps being run-centric when your defense isn't as dominant, not doing it, perhaps not having the explosive plays, because you can't always have those plays, is just grating on them. On top of the fact they're playing a first-place schedule, obviously, Pittsburgh is playing better than they've played in years, Cleveland is playing better than they've played in years, and Cincinnati is, well, Cincinnati, we'll talk about them later. But the real thing is, as we take a look at the AFC standings, remember, 7 teams going to make the playoffs, yeah? 7 teams. Right now, in their division alone, they are 4 games back with 6 to play. They are, for all intents and purposes, completely eliminated from division contention. So, 4 of those 7 spots are going to go to division champions. Right now, I say that right now, it is looking like Pittsburgh, the 1 seed, Kansas City, the 2 seed, 3 and 4 seed going to be a toss-up, Buffalo at 3 for me, and right now the Colts holding tiebreaker per the statistics I'm looking at number 4. So that puts us into the wildcard situation where we have the Titans at 5, 7 and 3, because they have tiebreak, Cleveland at 6, at 7 and 3, and then we're looking at Miami at 6 and 4, Las Vegas at 6 and 4, and then this Baltimore team also at 6-4. I'm going to be completely honest with you. Right now, The most impressive of those three teams, to me, is the Las Vegas Raiders. The Dolphins have done some impressive things, but the Dolphins, a lot of these games have kind of hinged on an early turnover, an early special teams play, and special teams is a little fluky. They're good at forcing turnovers, but will they be able to carry that into a playoff setting? I don't know. Obviously, you don't want to run upon a former MVP in a wild card round. You don't want to run upon a team that's a good running team. They can just kind of ball control you out of there, hold the ball for 35 minutes, and then you weren't even in the playoff game by the time you realize it's over. However, this Baltimore squad has not really been impressive in any of these games, if I'm being completely honest with you. They dominated Cleveland in week one. Okay, cool. They beat the shell of Houston in week two. Okay, cool. They lose to Kansas City. They beat Washington. Okay, cool. They beat Philly barely. Okay, cool. They beat up on the Bengals. Okay, cool. Like, they lose to Pittsburgh at home, which means their remaining Pittsburgh game, which is Tuesday night football, is in Pittsburgh. You know, they lose to New England. Concerning. They beat the Colts. All right. I'm not super high on the Colts, as I've said over and over. But in that one, like, was it super dominant? I guess they won by two scores. You know, they pulled away in the second half. They were down 10-7 at half. But you look at the stat line, there's nothing that's really going to knock your socks off. Granted, stats don't tell the whole story. It was a thorough victory here. You know, shut out in the second half. Good one for the defense, but you lose to Tennessee again. They're going to play Pittsburgh. They're probably going to lose to Pittsburgh, especially considering the COVID complications. There's reports that Lamar Jackson has COVID. Obviously, Mark Ingram in the backfield. If Lamar can't go, it is a guaranteed loss, I would say, for the Baltimore Ravens. And if Lamar has to miss any extended amount of time, you're looking at a team that might not make the playoffs. Because the following week, obviously, as we said, they play the Dallas Cowboys. Not a great team by any stretch of imagination. But if we're playing backup QB versus backup QB, who knows what's going to happen. Then, oh, by the way, the following week, primetime against the Cleveland Browns. So that would be a situation where you could be playing for your playoff life. They're sitting at 6-4 right now. They're going to be 6-5 in all likelihood by about midnight on Tuesday. Let's say they beat Dallas. They're at 7-5. So they go into that Cleveland game at 7-5. Let's take a look at who Cleveland has in the following 2 weeks. They have Jacksonville this week. They're going to get to 8 wins. Then they have Tennessee, which is an interesting one. So you're going to go into a situation where you're going to be at least one game behind, maybe. Maybe exactly one game behind, depending on how it goes. Cleveland coming off of a pretty good victory over the Philadelphia Eagles, a team that is not very good. Not a dominant win, but for Cleveland team that you're not expecting much out of, I would count that as a decent win. That being said, getting back to the crux of what I was talking about, is this Ravens team actually just bad? I don't think so, right? Like, I don't believe that this Baltimore Ravens team is a 6-4 team. When you look at it just on paper and just basic things, but we talk about their passing game, and we talked about this last year ad nauseum, and we're going to talk about it again. You know, number one receiver in terms of targets, number one receiver in terms of receiving yards, Mark Andrews, the tight end. I don't think Mark Andrews is really that dominant of a tight end, I'll be completely honest with you. Marquise Brown is a good deep threat. Do I think he's developed into a star wideout? Obviously not. Do I think he's number one right now? Obviously not. But does he have the potential? Yeah, I guess. He has the athleticism. He's got pretty decent hands. And then you start filling it out. Willie Snead? Willie Snead is a role player at the best, third best wideout on a great team. If he's a second best wideout, we're getting a little sketchy. I mean, you start going down the list, and obviously it has to hinge on their running game. But right now, their leading rusher far and away is Lamar Jackson. Lamar Jackson has the most attempts. Lamar Jackson has the most yards. He has the highest average. He has the longest rush. He's tied for the most touchdowns. But he also has the most fumbles. I don't know. This is a very weird team. It's probably the weirdest Ravens team we've seen in a while, to be quite honest. And right now, I think they, you know, I say this phrase a lot. They're talking about declaring yourself. It would mean a lot if they were to win this game against the Pittsburgh Steelers. And if you remember, last week, I picked them to win, and then I picked them this following on Thanksgiving to beat the Pittsburgh Steelers to declare themselves. Obviously, that game didn't happen. We are totally using the flipsies on that one. I'm not picking this team to win that game. it's just, you know, spoilers for the pick'em portion, which obviously is coming later. No way, no how am I picking that one. It's just not smart money. Especially coming off a week where we picked a lot of, you know, little upset picks. And we have the Patriots game, we lose by a touchdown. Bengals we picked on the road. And, you know, Joey B goes down. We'll talk about that in a sec. But let's move on. Number two in the standout seven, keeping it in the AFC North, let's talk realistically about the chances of the Pittsburgh Steelers going undefeated. They've got some tests here. And I would say if I were a betting man, gun to my head, I'd bet against it. Because even, you know, week 17, they might have nothing to play for if they're walking in a 15-0. But they've got this Tuesday game against the COVID-riddled Baltimore Ravens, who are just not playing as well as we know they can. Then they've got the Washington football team, who is playing for a lot. And as I said before, I said that you can go back. That was my inside horse to win the NFC East. The Washington football team being led by Alex Smith, especially. That was my inside horse. They win that game, though, Pittsburgh. Then the tests start coming. They go to Buffalo on the 13th of December, which would be a Sunday night football game. Then they find themselves in Cincy, should be an easy one. Then they find themselves playing the Colts at home, and they end in Cleveland. That's potentially three of their last four games against playoff teams, which is no cakewalk, especially considering this Colts team just beat the Green Bay Packers. Especially considering this Cleveland Browns team is trying to do something they haven't done in, the lifespan of quite a few people here. Let's go to the playoffs. Not quite a few. Obviously, it's not a 100-year drought or things like that. But this team has not been to the playoffs in eons. And they haven't been an actual contender probably since Bill Belichick was there. So here we are. Do I think they go undefeated? No. If I had to put a number on it, I would give it about a 15% chance. That's probably a little high even. But I do think this team can beat Buffalo. I do think this team can beat the Colts and beat the Browns. So realistically, you're asking me, are they the better team? They're the better team in every game of the remaining six. The better team doesn't always win. Moreover, it's a lot of pressure on a team to go in undefeated. Not to mention, I can't imagine the pressure that would go into a team going undefeated in the postseason. We saw all those Peyton Manning-led teams lose in about week 12, week 13, somewhere around there. A lot of the Brady teams pre-2007. Or even post-2007, losing around there. Some of the Saints teams we've seen. I believe there was a Falcons team in there. There was a Panthers team in there. Maybe the Titans at some point. There's a lot of teams we've seen get this far. And then just kind of throw one loss on the board. Okay, we're cool. You walk in with a lot less pressure than if you're walking into your divisional round playoff game at 16-0. Number three in the standout seven, let's keep it in the AFC North. We're going to go through the entire division for a good reason, to be completely honest with you. And we're going to talk about the Cleveland Browns. Where do the Cleveland Browns fit in all this? As we said last week, Cleveland Browns, pretty decent victory over the Philadelphia Eagles, a team that's not great. The week before, they beat the Texans in a not convincing way. Then they lose to the Raiders. Right now, I'm torn on which team I would say is better. They did not have Nick Chubb in that one. With Nick Chubb in the lineup, I would think that the Cleveland Browns are better than the Las Vegas Raiders, though the passing game of the Raiders, I would say, I'm much more confident in. Derek Carr, much more confident in him than Baker Mayfield. The weaponry, we can have a little bit of a debate when we start going through Aguilar, Henry Ruggs, and Darren Waller. Waller, who's pretty darn good at the tight end position, though he's much more of a receiving tight end than anything else, especially with OBJ missing. Cleveland not going to be able to air it out as much. Obviously, be interesting to see both of these teams at full strength go head-to-head, but they played already. It was 16-6. You know what I mean? The Raiders won that game, 10 points in the fourth quarter. Derek Carr throws for 100 yards, and Josh Jacobs, who, by the way, we didn't even mention in this, buck 30 on the ground almost. Josh Jacobs, a legit back in this league. You know how I feel about him. One of the better backs in the league. It's interesting, though. As I said, they're right in that pack. They're not going to win the division either. As far as teams competing for the wild card, I'd put them second to Tennessee, obviously, or below Tennessee, I should say. Right now, they're a game up on the Raiders. I don't know if I'd say they're better than the Raiders. I would put them above Miami, though. Miami, as I said, has a little bit of a fluky vibe to me. Just, you know, I could be wrong. Miami fans, if you want to comment, obviously, in the comment section, if there is a comment section, or on social media at Nick Donatic, wherever you may want to contact me and bash me for not rooting for the Miami Dolphins. Although, probably not the right way to phrase it, because I'd certainly be rooting for them. Especially with Fitzmagic finding a way into a game last week. And we won't even get too far into that, because Tua is still the starter, apparently. Very weird. Very weird. Not a fan of that move by Coach Flores at all. I understand the win now kind of thing, but you can't do that. That's not the way to do it. Alrighty. And that'll bring us to the final team in the division, obviously number four. What are the Bengals supposed to do here? So they're looking at a situation where they're starting Brandon Allen. Yeah, I know. Fantasy team's getting ready to go off. Brandon Allen over Ryan Finley. Does that mean anything to anyone? I don't really think so. Brandon Allen at 28 years old. I don't remember hearing his name very much ever. Obviously, we know Ryan Finley. We've seen him a little bit last year. I believe he went undrafted. Or no, excuse me. He was fourth-round draft pick. He was, very hit or miss. More miss than hit. The interesting thing to me is that they're going with Allen over Finley because I guess they already know what they have in him. The reason I bring this up, what are they supposed to do, is with Joey B facing the ACL and MCL injuries, being done this season, out for the bulk of next season, we're assuming, it's going to be really hard for me to see them doing anything. Obviously, it's going to be a dead season. Do you go out and sign a veteran quarterback and try to do something just because? Who knows where we're going to be in terms of the pandemic? Because, look, if I were forecasting back in March, I'd assume that we would have been somewhere over it by now. But here I am in month nine of sitting in my house all day. And, I wouldn't bet on there being fans next season either. So what are you doing that for? You know what I mean? TV ratings don't matter. Who cares? Everybody's at home anyway. The ratings are going to be up, theoretically. You know, you're in a situation where does it benefit you to go sign Jameis Winston for a year? Does it benefit you to go sign an Andy Dalton for a year? I don't know. I quite honestly, I don't have an answer to that question because at the end of the day, it's just very odd to me, if I'm being completely honest with you. I think they're in a pickle that many teams don't ever face and don't want to face, obviously. We take a look at some of the other options. I mean, PJ Walker, who just started for the Panthers, could they try and pick him off and make him the starter? I don't know. I find it bizarre, like I said. Good luck to the Cincinnati Bengals. We wish the best of luck to, the best of health to Joe Burrow in his recovery. It sucked to see him go down because he's one of those exciting young players that you have that feeling he's got that it factor and he might be able to pull out, one of those great NFL careers. And of course, so early in it, he didn't even make it through the season. Genuinely unfortunate. If I were them, though, as I said, let's just take the losses on the chin. You want to throw Ryan Finley out there? Go for it. You want to throw Brandon Allen out there? Go for it. I'm not making a move for a QB. This team is not ready to win. Not worth it. It's not worth going 6-10 to get a better draft, to get a worse draft pick, rather. Better record, worse draft pick. In the long run, that's not the move. Take the losses on the chin. Get a top 10 pick this year. Get a top 10 pick next year. Joe can come back, rehab. And, it sucks if you're AJ Green, an aging wideout, and it's one of those situations where if you're the front office, you might want to trade AJ Green just as kind of a, I don't want you to have to do the Larry Fitzgerald, I don't want you to be here forever and have no really chance at winning on your resume. But if he wants to stay, which who knows, we've seen reports over the years that he didn't necessarily now and again, that's all completely up to him. But at the end of the day, like I said, it'd be hard for me to see another one of these star wide receivers just kind of stranded. And, obviously winning isn't everything. Well, if you're using the popular quote, winning isn't everything, it's the only thing. I think that's Lombardi, though I'm not 100% certain. It's not everything making a Hall of Fame career, but it would be nice if he got a chance at least to play some meaningful football towards the tail end of his career here. Number five in the standout seven. You know we couldn't get through the whole thing without having one of these. We're going to go with a three-piece. Three MVP caliber QBs, three close games this past Sunday and Monday, and only one of them able to pull it out. So we're going to start chronologically here. We're going to go Green Bay versus Indy. Now, Aaron Rodgers was not fantastic early in this one, though they had a huge lead. They're up 28-14 at half, give up 11 unanswered in the third. They wind up taking this one to OT and losing. Aaron Rodgers played pretty well, I think, in this one. I mean, the running game was almost non-existent. Marquez Valdez-Scantling, obviously, with the OT fumble. I believe it was MVS. Correct me if I'm wrong, Packer fan, wherever you might be. I believe it was Marquez Valdez-Scantling with the fumble in this one. Davante Adams played all right. For the Colts, you take a look, and, you know, this should be a game that gives you a little bit of hope. Phillip Rivers, 24-36, 288, three touchdowns. Jonathan Taylor, 22 for 90 on the ground, pretty good. Jordan Wilkins filling in with 20 yards as well. The receivers, it was very spread around. No one jumped out. You know, we have, what, 11 different players with a catch in this one. For the Indianapolis Colts, we saw Michael Pittman with a touchdown. Trey Burton picks up a touchdown in this one. Jack Doyle as well. Fan favorite. He's been there forever. T.Y. didn't really pop off in this one. No biggie. Nyheim Hines showing his versatility in this one. We saw Brissett come in at one point because Rivers believes to be hurt. Lower leg injury, but obviously he guts it out because he's Phil Rivers. He hasn't missed a start in ever. It's a very interesting one from that perspective, but we're talking about the MVP caliber quarterbacks, and I don't think this is any knock on Rodgers, and by this I mean this loss, because this game went to OT, and you know, when push came to shove, Rodgers had enough time to do his thing late in the game, and it really came down to sloppy play, like I said, fumbles, things like that, and this is a game that the Packers should have won. It's a little concerning if you're a Packer fan, obviously, looking at the way they kind of crumbled in this one, up two touchdowns at halftime, and considering that the ramifications this could have, and, you know, projecting forward into a playoff scenario where if they're facing Tampa Bay or LA, you know, it's a little weird. No knock on Rodgers, though. However, he does not get the extra bonus points that the next person we're talking about will. As we look at the Kansas City Chiefs versus the Las Vegas Raiders. Raiders out early, 14-7. 17-14 at half, really close game all throughout. And at the end of the day, Pat Mahomes just had too much time. Nothing crazy from Josh Jacobs on the ground from the Raiders side. Derek Carr played a serviceable game, or I haven't even called it a good game. 6 out of 10 game. 23-31, 275, 3 touchdowns. Darren Waller, as we mentioned before, chipping in. This is where we start getting into the receiving core, as I was talking about. I like what Aguilar has been able to do, kind of revitalize his career. I like Hunter Renfro on paper, you know. Obviously, I like Darren Waller, but beyond that, and Ruggs, you know, it seems at this point in his career, he's a deep threat, and that's it. The Chiefs, on the other hand, and back to what we're really talking about, Patty Mahomes, 34-45, 348, two touchdowns, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, the Fresh Prince of Helaire, two touchdowns on the ground, almost 5 yards a carry, big game from Travis Kelce, big game from Tyreek Hill, and this looked like the defending champions. This looked like the team that was able to come back and win the Super Bowl, and at the end of the day, that's all I've been looking for out of this team. The earlier game against the Raiders, they kind of got popped in the mouth, and they weren't expecting it. This one, they were ready for a fight, and, you know, they took the fight right to them when it mattered late in the game. They did. So, it is what it is. Patty Mahomes, still doing Patty Mahomes things, and it's intriguing to me to see if how Patty Mahomes will be able to do in terms of will he get some MVP votes. You know, depending on how this season finishes out, especially with the Seattle Seahawks kind of stumbling a little bit, how do these last 6 weeks shape out? Does Patty Mahomes win another MVP? He just might. He just might. And then going to another Hall of Fame caliber quarterback, a little early for me to say that on Mahomes, and, you know, I'll say it on Rodgers because he'll probably get in there, but to be completely honest, Rodgers had a lot of those years where it's like, yeah, they were good, but they couldn't. And it's like, okay, well, winning isn't everything, right? Here we are. Let's talk about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Let's talk about Tuomi. And Tuomi did not have a very good game in this one. I think the Patriots, oh, it's a little Freudian slip there. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers, rather, still feels weird to say, got the benefit of a few calls in this one. Pass interference aids their early touchdown. Pass interference puts them in the red zone later. The Rams still find a way to be up at halftime. And this Rams team, I'm going to say, I'm buying in a little bit here. We've discussed this, and I said I wasn't super high on them because I wasn't sure what the offense could do. I'm not sure about Jared Goff. I was high on him before. I don't think he's been the same since he pooped the bed in the Super Bowl. And I still stand by that. But 39 of 51, 376, three touchdowns, two awful interceptions. one of which late in the game when they were trying to give the game away. They were trying their hardest to give the game to Tom Brady. However, Tom refused to take the win, and it just wasn't there. I mean, Tom tried to throw two forward passes on a play in this one. Fournette had a handful of drops on not really completely accurate throws by Tommy, if we're being completely honest. I don't know. They get away with an obvious pick play on fourth down, and it's still an incompletion, and then Goff throws the ball right back to them. I don't know. Tommy throws an awful pick to end the game. Tom Brady not looking like Tom Brady. And this game, Tom Brady, with the pass rush coming, I'm not going to go all the way back to, oh, we looked like Tom in the Super Bowl when they lost to the Giants and the Eagles, and I'm not going there. This looked like the Tom Brady last year that gave me cause to pause. And we talked about this. If you listen to the show, first of all, thank you for sticking around. If you haven't, last season I was saying that Tommy just didn't look like Tommy. He didn't look like, it looked like either the legs were gone or he was rushing it or something was different. It reminded me of late career Peyton Manning. And, you know, Tom's been great in a handful of games this year, but then you look at one like this one and 26 of 48, two picks, that's not Tom Brady. It's not. And for some reason, he just hasn't been able to get on the same page with some of these guys. I don't know if it has something to do with COVID, the way they've been running their practices, whether it be a new playbook, new scheme, new whatever. I figured Mike Evans would be a dominant force. I don't even think Mike Evans is the first target on a lot of these plays. You know, it seems like he's a little bit more in tune with Godwin. Obviously, AB led them in receptions on this one. Gronkowski having another one of those late career Gronkowski games where it's like, was he on the field? Two catches for 25. You know, it's odd to me that a team like this, and I do think Tampa Bay is a legitimate title contender, it's odd to me that a team like this can be so meh. They're very hot and cold, which is not very Brady-like, if we're being honest, back to the Patriots days. You know, look through their last handful of games here. They lose to the Rams, primetime game. They blow out the Panthers, who I think are a decent team. They get scorched by the New Orleans Saints at home. Then they barely beat the New York Football Giants, who are pretty bad. You take a look at, they blow out the Raiders, who are a pretty good team. They blow out the Packers, who are a pretty good team. They lose to the Bears, because Tom forgets how many downs there are. Like, and they lost, obviously, going all the way back to week one to the Saints. And that's assuming, you know, they're going to need to get into a rhythm, and that's something I discussed, right? They're going to need to get into a rhythm if they are going to make a real title run, which I think they will. But right now, point blank, in a vacuum, this Rams team is just simply better than this Tom Brady-led Buccaneers squad. I don't know what it is. Like I said, a myriad of things we could discuss. But bottom line, right now, the pass rush from the Rams, coupled with, if they can get that kind of production out of Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods, who I think are both, you know, high B-tier receivers, you know what I mean? A great number two on a team, and they're two great number twos, and, you know, fill it in. They combined for 23 catches for 275 yards. That's more yards than Tom threw for, period. You know, and production here and there from Everett and Reynolds and Higbee, and see what you can get on the ground from Malcolm Brown and the young kid Akers. See what you can get and see where it goes. Throw in some trickeration, some creativity from Sean McVay, and I'm kind of jumping on board. Number six in the standout seven, I just wanted to touch on some more AFC notes here. We talked about the Indy game. We got a little bit deeper into the playoff picture. Let's talk about this Miami Dolphin game, which was bizarre. Because, first of all, I wouldn't say that the Broncos played spectacularly in this game. They win this one 20-13. However, here we are, looking halfway through this game, and looking at the end of the third quarter, rather. It's 20-10, or maybe some point in the third quarter. I'm not exactly sure when it happened. We're looking at this point, and Brian Flores goes, you know what? I'm going to Fitzmagic. And look, if this was a New York Jets team where you're looking at Sam Darnold in his third year, if this was a team that's contending where it's like, okay, we're getting a lack of production from a quarterback that we expected to contend out of a veteran quarterback, that's just not the case. We're in a situation where, obviously, as I've said ad nauseum, it's a young kid, we're in a learning year, we're ahead of schedule. I really disagree with this move, and I, like I said, I wonder how this is going to impact the team's future going forward. Are they going to be, you know, just okay with this? Is this going to be in the offseason where we've seen a lot of teams go with coaches that are more centric on helping the QB develop and helping things like that? Will they go away from a guy like Flores? I doubt it. I think that would be a stretch. Although, crazier things have happened. Moreover, for Ryan Fitzpatrick, no less. Look, I got no beef with Fitzmagic. I want Fitzmagic as my backup. I like him in my locker room. But, like, really? Fitzmagic? Like, there's no future there. That you're wasting time and you're only hurting your own team. To be completely honest with you, that's the way I look at it. You're not helping anything, really. I mean, look, if he comes back and wins that game, then you have a little bit of a mini quarterback controversy, and that's even worse. You don't want that. You don't want that on the kid's head. Number 7 in the standout 7. We're going to go through the two Thanksgiving games briefly, and then we'll discuss the Detroit Lions making a move here. We'll discuss that. So we have the Dallas. We'll start with the late game and then work our way backwards. Dallas Cowboys get thrashed by the Washington football team. Alex Smith throws for a 150, nothing crazy. Antonio Gibson, who is really at this point developing into quite the player, 20 carries for a 115 and 3 touchdowns. I think he's really showing, hey man, I can be the lead back, and that's why they moved on from a guy like Adrian Peterson, and I think it's showing that they really have seemed to have made the right move. Scary Terry, obviously, in this one, 7 for 92. We like Scary Terry on this show. We're big fans of him. Andy Dalton, 25 of 35, 215, a touchdown and a pick. The running game, non-existent. 10 for 32 for Ezekiel Elliott. This Dallas Cowboys team is a shell of themselves. They're still in it, but oh my goodness, they right now look like the worst team in their division, which is saying something. I know they lost their QB. I know they're having really bad offensive line injuries and turmoil trying to fill that gap. But the New York Football Giants are half of a team half the time. They're competitive for some portion of the game and then find a way to throw. This Washington team is on quarterback number 3, and Philadelphia looks awful, and somehow Dallas right now is the worst team in this division. And the other game, the one that's forcing us to have a little bit of a weird discussion here, the Houston Texans completely blow out the Detroit Lions 41-25 in this one. 4 touchdowns, 318 yards for Deshaun Watson. Not much on the ground. Big game from Will Fuller. Brandon Cooks showing some Brandon Cooks, little throwback. Matt Stafford, 28-42, 295, meaningless yards, touchdown and a pick, 2 touchdowns for AP. You know, it's this Detroit team is not good. I expect at the beginning of the year with Golladay healthy that this team would have been able to at least be mediocre, try and find a way to fight for that 7th spot in the playoffs. Unfortunately, they haven't been able to do that. And then today, obviously, the news breaking almost as we started recording that they are going to be firing Matt Patricia and general manager Bob Quinn. Patricia 13-29-1 in 2+ seasons with the Detroit Lions. This is interesting to me. I don't know where they're going to go. Obviously, it's way too early to prognosticate where they're going to go with these things. But it's says a lot to me that they're ready and willing to make a move. They think that this team is, obviously, I'd assume they think that this team should be better. I tend to agree. 4-7 is disappointing for a team like this that's been bad for so long. And Matthew Stafford has the talent to be an actual contender, but it just hasn't ever really come together. Calvin Johnson obviously retiring early kind of throws a wrench into certain things. But the team is just not nearly as good as, you know, presumably ownership and the fans would like them to be, obviously. So time to make a change yet again in another one of these, you know, annual losing franchises. And then I guess they're hoping that they'll be able to break free of that eventually, and best of luck to them. Additionally, and we're going to do this in the news and notes, the Chicago Bears are going back to Trubisky. They have blown all semblances, or any semblance, I should say. They have blown any semblance of early season momentum. We take a look, we did it with the AFC, we'll take a look at the NFC picture right now. Right now, the number one seed is the New Orleans Saints at 8-2. We have two teams tied at 7-3. The NFC West led by the Los Angeles Rams, who have tiebreak at the moment. Packers is 7-3. Then we have the four seed, sadly, right now would be the Washington football team. 5, 6, and 7, we have Seattle at 7-3 would be in the 5 spot. Buccaneers is 7-4 in the 6 spot. Then we have the Cardinals, 6-4 in the 7 spot. Nobody from the NFC East going to be fighting for those spots. But we have the Bears just one game back of the Arizona Cardinals. Obviously, the Panthers a little bit further back at 4-7. Vikings a little bit further back at 4-6. So the Bears are really on the outside looking in, and they're just a game out. They're in a situation where they think they can find a way to make it. And I guess I can't realistically blame them. Do I think Trubisky is it? No, but I do think this is a chance for them to give it one last go. If it fails here, Trubisky will not start another game as a Chicago Bear after this season. Nor should he, if we're being completely blatantly honest. But I guess give it one more go and see what you got. Next, let's move into everyone's favorite part of the show. I always say that. I assume it is. We are a preview show, and we're here to preview the games. Let's move into the pick'em portion of this week's episode of the Necessary Roughness Podcast. And we're going to start that with a 1 o'clock kick from Buffalo as the Los Angeles Chargers head to the East Coast to take on the Bills. Now, this one's an intriguing one. There's no way I'm picking the Chargers in this game, but I do want to see how Justin Herbert plays against a higher-tier defense, against a legitimate contending playoff team. We saw him put up a good fight early in his career, or obviously it's still early in his career. I believe it was his first start against the Kansas City Chiefs. We saw him put up a good fight in that one, but they just couldn't finish. It would shock me if the Chargers won this game. The Bills have a lot to play for. They're in the catbird seat in their division. They have a chance to get a high playoff seed as well. Give me Buffalo to win this one at home. However, before we move on, obviously, we have to do the injury report. Buffalo going to be without wide receiver, deep threat John Brown in this one, and tackle Cody Ford. Chargers, on the other hand, which are some big ones, going to be without Casey Hayward, without D-end Melvin Ingram, and D-end Uchenna Nwosu. Questionable also, Kalen Ballage, who's been a bit of a revelation for them. Bit of a revelation for them. He has been a decent contributor out of the backfield, a guy that's been tossed around a little bit. Guy that was, I believe, cut by the New York Jets, and that says a lot because the New York Jets can't even win a football game this year. I think he's better than that. However, with Hayward out, one of their better corners, if not their best corner, Melvin Ingram, one of their better pass rushers, it's going to be hard for me to see them to win this one. And even at full strength, this one's rough. No thanks. No upset this week. I'm going to move on with the Bills' victory. Next, we have an AFC South matchup from Indianapolis, and this one could have big bearings on the way the playoffs shake out here. The Tennessee Titans head to Indy to take on the Colts. Now, the Colts going to be without linebacker Bobby Okereke. Some big questionables here. Center Ryan Kelly listed as questionable. Quentin Nelson, the popular and Pro Bowl guard, listed as questionable. Wide receiver Zach Pascal listed as questionable. Quarterback Phillip Rivers with a toe. Linebacker Anthony Walker. For the Titans, they're going to be without Adoree Jackson again in their defensive secondary, and Adam Humphries at the wide receiver position, questionable center Ben Jones, and guard Roger Saffold. We talked about Phil Rivers not missing any games. I highly doubt he misses this one. However, that's not going to impact my pick on the game, because I'm leaning towards the Tennessee Titans. I think the Tennessee Titans bring this one home, if I'm being completely honest with you. I do think that this team is talented enough to make a run similar to what they did last year. Do I think they'll go on another AFC championship kind of hunt? I don't think so this season, but with Derrick Henry, anything is possible, to be completely honest. And I do like what I saw from them last week, so I think they keep up the momentum and bring this one home. Although we're talking momentum, not much more momentum than the Colts beating the Packers at home. They're still at home. This is really in toss-up territory, but as I said, give me Derrick Henry. He's a dog. Give me the Tennessee Titans. Our next matchup is the Teddy Bridgewater Bowl as the Carolina Panthers head to Minnesota to take on the Vikings. The Vikings going to be without DN Jordan Brailford and guard Ezra Cleveland. Doubtful tight end Irv Smith. Panthers going to be without Dennis Daly. Doubtful corner Dante Jackson. And the list of questionables is a long one. Sam Franklin at safety. Marquise Haynes at D-end, Christian McCaffrey at running back, Russell Okung at tackle, Tahir Whitehead in the linebacking core. I believe that Teddy Bridgewater will be back for this one. He will be starting for this one. We saw the Vikings blow a game last week against the Dallas Cowboys, although I'll be honest, I did like what I saw out of them pre-blowing the game, but that's not exactly how it works. We saw three touchdowns for Kirk Cousins. Dalvin Cook went for 115. Big game from Adam Thielen. It's got to be a blow to the confidence, because they win that game, they're 5-5, they're still in it. Right now, they're 4-6. a bit of a pickle to be in, if we're being completely honest, in terms of playoff positioning. I'm going to take the Vikings to win the Teddy Bowl. I'm going to be honest, I wanted to take the Panthers to win the Teddy Bowl, just so Teddy can get a win back on the old field, but I'm going to go with the Minnesota Vikings in this one. Next, we have a 62nd pick, a throwback even. The Cleveland Browns taking on the Jacksonville Jaguars in Jacksonville. Let's take a quick look. Jaguars without wide receiver DJ Chark and Chris Conley, as well as Sidney Jones in the defensive secondary and Andrew Norwell on the offensive line. Gardner Minshew questionable in this one with the thumb. We take a look at the latest reports. I don't believe they're starting him. They're going with Mike Glennon. So he's going to be out this week, and if that's the case, we don't even need to go through this. The Browns are going to win this game. See you next week, Cleveland, as you will be improving, theoretically, to 8-3 for the first time in a long time. You find a way to blow this one, oh my goodness. Next, another 62nd pick, if we're being completely honest. The New York Football Giants head to Cincinnati to take on the Cincinnati Bengals. Bengals, obviously, without Joey Beans, Joe Burrow, we just talked about. Bengals, doubtful wide receiver Mike Thomas, questionable corner Mackenzie Alexander, linebacker Marcus Bailey, and running back Giovanni Bernard, who's battling a concussion. Giants, questionable corner Brandon Williams. New York Giants should win this game. They're legitimately in contention now for this division, which hurts my eyes and my heart, even though I will be rooting for them. My Goonie Goo Goo, a team this bad, should not be able to win a division, especially with a record this mediocre. Give me the Giants on the road. Next, we've got the Chandler Jones Bowl. Doesn't exactly have a ring to it, as the Arizona Cardinals head to Foxborough to take on the Patriots. The Cardinals, gonna be without tight end Darrell Daniels, DN Josh Morrow, and safety Jalen Thompson. Patriots, we talk about their injury report every week. They list about 15 different people as questionable. We'll only talk about the outs. Rex Burkhead out with a knee, and Isaiah Wynn also out with a knee, the tackle. I'm taking the Cardinals in this one. Can't get really a read on this Pats team. I don't think they're very good, but then again, they found a way to beat Baltimore, so I don't really know. Give me the Cardinals on the road to stay in the playoff hunt and stay in prime position here. They dropped a 6-5. They really opened the door to a handful of teams. They moved to 7-4, get a little bit more momentum, and they could stay in it in the NFC West. Our second-to-last 1 o'clock kick is a snoozer, if there ever were snoozers. The Miami Dolphins head to New Jersey to take on the Jets, the winless Jets, the hapless Jets, the depressing Jets. If you are a Jet fan, I apologize. Miami Dolphins going to be without their running back, who seemed to come out of nowhere, Salvon Ahmed. They're going to be without guard Solomon Kindley. Questionable in this one. Tua with a thumb injury. I believe Tua should go. Brian Flores said he's still the man. Questionable wide receiver Jakeem Grant. For the Jets, they're going to be without Patrick Onwuasor and the linebacking core. Also, doubtful tackle Chuma Edoga and George Fant. Questionable Blake Cashman and tackle Alex Lewis. This Jets team is all-time bad. It would be very funny, to be honest, if they go winless. It'd also be funny to watch them upset anyone, though. So give me the Dolphins in this one. I think last week was a blip more than a trend. I think this team is good enough defensively and mediocre enough offensively to find a way to beat the Jets. It's not that hard, guys. Everybody else did it. Our final game is a little bit of a tricky one in the 1 o'clock slot as the Las Vegas Raiders head to Atlanta to take on the Falcons. Atlanta without Todd Gurley in this one, which is a big one. Also on the defensive end, questionable Dante Fowler. Back on the offensive end, however, questionable, even bigger ones, Hayden Hurst at the tight end position and Julio Jones. You might need Julio Jones to win a game if you are the Falcons. Raiders, questionable Cleveland Farrell and safety Eric Harris. I'm taking the Raiders in this one. It would have been closer if Todd Gurley was going to be going in this one, if I'm being completely honest with you. It's intriguing to me, this matchup, because I do think the Falcons' offense can be explosive, and I think it can be a good game here, a little bit of a shootout that goes into the 4 o'clock hour, the witching hour, if you watch on NFL Red Zone, or maybe it's a 3 o'clock hour. As it gets closer down the stretch, I think this team can make enough big plays, both with Julio, if he's out there, and Calvin Ridley to keep this one interesting. However, the Raiders are playing for much more. Give me the Raiders. Next, our first of two 4:05 kicks, as the New Orleans Saints head to Denver to take on the Broncos. Obviously, again, no Drew Brees in this one. They're also going to be without Ty Montgomery in the backfield and Andres Pete on the O-line. Deonte Harris, questionable with a neck injury at wide receiver. Broncos without safety Trey Marshall. They're also going to be questionable. Corner Bryce Callahan. So big injuries to the back end of that defense. On the offensive side, however, Damar Dotson on the O-line. Graham Glasgow also questionable. And wide receiver, rookie wide receiver, Jerry Judy. I take the Saints in this one every time, even without Drew Brees. I think without Drew Brees, they're susceptible to upsets even more. But I think this Broncos team really found a way to win last week that I don't 100% understand. I don't think they can do that 2 weeks in a row. I mean, even looking at the stats from last week, you didn't really get too much out of Drew Locke. Mel Gordon gave you 84 yards. Phillip Lindsay gave you 82. The two-headed approach is kind of, you know, it's kind of good. I do like those both of those backs. But against the Saints defense, I don't think they'll be able to pull off as much. And I think the Saints move to 9-2 on the season in one of the closer divisions in the league. Next, we've got one that sounded better at the beginning of the year, although we thought one of the teams would be bad, but it's not the one that is. The 49ers head to LA to take on the Rams. Obviously, with the 49ers, injury troubles have been well documented. In this one, they're without Tevin Coleman, Tom Compton on the line, and corner Kaywan Williams, also questionable. Linebacker Dre Greenlaw, D-tackle Javon Kinlaw, and tight end Jordan Reed. The Rams, doubtful linebacker Terrell Lewis, and questionable center Brian Allen, and tight end Tyler Higbee. Now, I'm taking the Rams in this one solely because the 49ers are so beat up at this point, I don't know what to expect from them as a team. So give me the Rams to win this one at home. Next, our 425 kick, the lone one, a matchup between the Kansas City Chiefs, the defending champions, and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. This is going to be an intriguing one for me because we have Patty Pat, the future face or current face of the league against Tom Brady in his second home, his new home. Buck can be without corner Jamel Dean, tight end Tanner Hudson, center A.Q. Shipley, also questionable guard Ali Marpet, and tackle Donovan Smith. Big injuries on the offensive line. This one has shootout written all over it. We talked about the Buccaneers going both ways. They're good 1 week, bad the next week, good 1 week, bad the next week. We don't really know how things are going to go for that team. That being said, I am more hopeful for, or rather, if I were a fan, I'd be more hopeful and expect more out of the Kansas City Chiefs than I would the Buccaneers. Moreover, Kansas City Chiefs have Steve Spagnuolo calling the defense, and Spagnuolo has shown in the past the ability to beat a Tom Brady-led offense. Give me the Kansas City Chiefs in this one to win on the road and really make this statement. Obviously, everyone knows they're a title contender, and I always talk about making statements, and I know it gets old, but really taking down the Buccaneers here would be one of those, all right, guys, we're just as good as we were last year. Let's go. Let's get into gear. Let's make this playoff run. We got six games left. Let's do our thing. The Sunday night game is the aforementioned game between the Packers and the Bears as Trubisky makes his return to Lambeau Field, makes his return to the field, period, since being benched. Nick Foles doubtful in this one. Doesn't matter. They're going with Trubisky. Questionable tackle Rashad Coward, D-tackle Akeem Hicks, tackle Charles Leno, and safety Sherrick McManus. For the Packers, questionable Tyler Irvin making his way back. Corner Josh Jackson, wide receiver Equanimeous St. Brown, and wide receiver Marquez Valdes-Scantling. Though after last week's game, I'm sure you won't miss him as much as you think or thought that you would, if we're being completely honest. He's a good player, but man, did that cost. Especially when you're talking about the high seed race here. We're taking the Packers every time. I'm not taking the Bears, especially on the road, especially against the Packers, especially with Trubisky. Give me Green Bay to bring this one home. And we've got a battle of the birds on Monday Night Football as the Seattle Seahawks head to Philly to take on the floundering Philadelphia Eagles. I don't think there's any way we take the Eagles in this game. I don't think there's any way you're taking the Eagles at home, even if you're an Eagle fan, even if you hate the Seahawks. Realistically, you don't think that's going to be the way this goes. So give me Seattle to win this one in prime time. Our final game of the week comes on Tuesday as the COVID crisis continues to make the schedule weird and the year even weirder, but football on Tuesday, it's not the end of the world. Baltimore takes on the Pittsburgh Steelers. We talked about this earlier. They're facing the COVID things. It's really hard for me to forecast if some of these players will be able to play. Melvin Ingram, Lamar Jackson. I'm going to take Pittsburgh just because I don't know if these guys will be able to play. Last week we discussed it, and I thought that it'd be a chance for Baltimore to really make a statement and say, look, we know we've had some bad games here, but we're still a legitimate contender. I don't know if that's the case at this point. With Lamar out, or potentially out, I can't take them. Give me Pittsburgh to extend their undefeated streak to 11-0. No Thursday night football games in week 13, so that is our final one. It's going to be an interesting week, as we said, but we'll see how it shakes out, as always, and we'll be here next Saturday afternoon for the next episode. Thank you for joining us. Episode 91 of the Necessary Roughness Podcast, presented by Last Word on Sports. It's a wrap. You know I'll be here next week. I hope you are, too. Thank you. I'm your host, Nicholas Donatic, signing off.